Welcome to this very special episode of the Piano Fortissimo podcast, episode number 12. Today I'm absolutely thrilled and honored to welcome an extraordinary guest, the conductor Jakub Hrusza. Jakub is not only one of the top conductors of our time, but from 2025 he will also be the music director designate of the Royal Opera, Covent Garden in London. This new role is a testament to his remarkable artistry, vision and dedication to the world of music. Born in the Czech Republic, Jakub Hrusza is chief conductor of the Bamberg Symphony and principal guest conductor of the Czech Philharmonic. He has also served as principal guest conductor of the Orchestra dell'Accademia Nazionale di Santa Cecilia, the Philharmonia Orchestra and the Tokyo Metropolitan Symphony Orchestra. In 2023, he was awarded the prestigious Opus Classic Conductor of the Year. Jakub is a frequent guest with many of the world's greatest orchestras, enjoying close relationships and performing regularly with the Vienna Philharmonic, Berlin Philharmonic, Bavarian Radio Symphony, Munich Philharmonic, Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra, Staatskapelle Dresden, Tonhalle Orchester Zürich, Luzern Festival Orchestra, Royal Concertgebouw Orchestra, Orchestre de Paris, Orchestre Philharmonique de Radio France, and the Mahler Chamber Orchestra. In the United States, he collaborates frequently with the Cleveland Orchestra, New York Philharmonic, Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and Boston Symphony Orchestra. But beyond this extraordinary career, Jakub is a truly wonderful human being. His modesty, down-to-earth nature, positivity and unwavering support to everyone he works with are just a few of the many qualities that make him such a unique and inspiring presence in the music world. I'm so grateful and deeply honored to have Jakub as my guest today. So, let's get started. Welcome to Piano Fortissimo, the podcast where the world of classical music meets personal stories and professional insights. I'm your host, Alexandra Silocha, concert pianist and bossa nova artist for over two decades. Join me as we explore the intricacies of music careers, the artistry behind pianos and other instruments, dive deep with special guests from all corners of the arts, and uncover the nuances of cultural and self-management. Whether you're an aspiring musician, a performer, or simply a music lover, this podcast offers something for everyone. Jakub, thank you so much for taking your time to join us today on the Piano Fortissimo podcast. I'm honored and delighted to have you with us.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm honored too. Ask me everything you want and I will answer everything I want.
That's a good one. Okay, so what first inspired your love for music and conducting?
Okay, so to be funny at the beginning, so I would say the power of the conductor. and as many children, I think I was really fascinated. I know it's basically true for all children at one point, because it is really like a better version of a policeman at the crossroads, right? They just see an amazing figure who, you know, influences musical forces and energies. And because I was so much surrounded by music, kind of not because my family would have been musical, but because they understood or noticed that I was musical. So they surrounded me with music somehow, which I'm very grateful for. And I attended a school which had a lot of music in it. And so I was privileged to have music every day in my life. And symphony music or orchestra and the colors of it and the power of it and the variety of it really fascinated me since the beginning, probably more than any other forms of musical expression. But I never thought really deeply I would have it as a life profession until I was about 14, 15 years old. At which point I kind of was heading to some sort of future. I didn't know what. I could have been a lawyer, or could have been a doctor, or whatever, a scientist, or a translator. I don't know. I simply don't know. And at that point, I participated in many kinds of bands, orchestras, and ensembles, especially as a trombonist, but a little bit as a pianist as well, like an orchestra pianist. Occasionally, I played something solo. I made a recital of mine, but I knew I would never be a concert pianist, like a professional solo pianist. But I somehow felt this mission of a conductor would fit me very well. And in the student orchestra, I met, and that's back to your question, I met simply an older colleague, Tomasz Krejci, a person who was studying conducting back then, was about 10 years older. And he was such an inspiring figure. He was such an artist, in front of us youngsters. And he really took us so seriously and inspired us in so many ways. And I was observing this amazing profession in front of me. And I thought, this is exactly what I want to do in my life. And from that point, I really tried my absolute best to, fulfill this dream. And yeah, that was the beginning of my conducting endeavor, so to speak. So I was 15, 16. So basically, I was playing the trombone in a symphony orchestra, and I thought I can do that job over there in front of me rather than what I was doing at the point. And this dream came true, and I'm eternally grateful because this is something I would wish to everyone, to find something one dreams of, and then to find that actually the dream was a relevant one, not just a dead end. So something like that.
So your first instrument was the trombone or piano? Or trombone and piano because you had to play the piano as well.
You mean first instrument in terms of like what I played first in my life or first in priority? No.
Normally you have like a first instrument, like a chosen instrument, and piano is on top because everybody has to play the piano.
Well, so I definitely wanted to play the piano because we had it at home. It would be similar, like Leonard Bernstein said, the piano, I saw the piano standing there and just wanted to play it. So I was intrigued by it, or kind of, it was a magnetic for me. I wanted to, I tried to do it on my own, and no one needed to force me to come to piano and try something. But I always dreamt of playing the clarinet, and it didn't work out because the teacher at the local school didn't have a space to take me. And so he said, oh, he said to my mother, oh, your son is maybe not so talented, so let's have him play something else. So, and I went to an amazing different teacher, brass instrument teachers, and he accepted me. And but of course, you never start with the trombone, so you start with the recorder, block flute, and that's what I did, and I was pretty good at it. I really was, going to some local competitions and playing sonatas of Baroque time and so on. But that was not the end. That was not the goal. It was the means to get to the brass instruments, and I played the trumpet a little bit, and then various brass instruments, in fact. And because my teacher was an ardent, enthusiastic trombonist himself, and he needed also a competent trombonist in his bands, so he really
But
kind
he used you. He
of
took
used me. And I'm glad because the trombone is a very versatile instrument. It plays in all kinds of ensembles: old music, Renaissance music, jazz music, big bands, brass bands, symphony orchestras, and it's not so extremely difficult, such as violin or oboe or whatever. So that you can actually combine it very well with the piano. So that was about my path. So I was like the very focused classical music, precision driven, and poetry indicated personal solo study was the piano, and later, of course, vocal scores and orchestra scores. So the piano was indispensable for me. But the trombone introduced me to the real life of what an orchestra means, you know, and meeting colleagues and hanging out with them, and really in the big band, actually even improvising. I remember my improvised solo in a big band that I was probably most nervous in my life. But I had this experience, and I'm very grateful for it because I think it's important for conductors, I guess, to play at least some orchestral instrument because it's a different feeling than a piano. Piano is, in a way, very far from the idea of orchestral playing.
Do you still play the trombone?
No, I don't play the trombone. I kept it like a regular habit for a couple of years as I was already becoming a conductor. And it was less and less time, of course. And at the end, it was only Christmas. We played the Christmas carols from the Brno Tower, where I come from. And I called it always like two-hour fitness, I called it. So I was able to practice like one day before this event, but maximum for 1 hour in order for the day of the event to be able to sustain 1 hour of playing. And then I put my trombone back to the case and it waited 1 year again when
Well,
I
that's what you
needed it to.
call efficient practicing.
Yeah, exactly. But if you practice too much, you got destroyed, of course. So I exactly knew, like, my lips were telling me, okay, don't practice anymore, otherwise you are not able to manage tomorrow.
Wonderful, because I know you play the piano and you just released a CD where you play the piano, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's right. It's a very unusual adventure for me, and really one of, I call it a COVID child, because after almost 20 years of actually not really playing the piano regularly, I was a very passionate young pianist who never achieved real, you know, technical efficiency. I was always much more passionate than precise, and you know, I was always a little bit clumsy, but not, I mean, not too much. It was like somehow I played the piano the way I thought the orchestra should sound, you know. But the orchestra was, and still is, a little bit heavy when I play the piano. And but suddenly I started to miss it so much, like the playing, just for my pleasure, you know, just playing not only the scores and vocal scores, but you know, technical things and a little sonata here and there, of a less, you know, less demands, of course. And that led me to a conversation with my artistic partner, Kateřina Kněžíková, the soprano, with whom we had recorded the four last songs of by Strauss with orchestra. And she somehow, you know, cheekily asked me if I wouldn't join her as a pianist. And I was really, I found it absolutely ridiculous or hilarious. I thought, this is the best joke of the year. But somehow, at least out of sport, I started occupying myself with these amazing songs by Strauss. And I thought, okay, these simpler ones I could maybe cope with if I practice for 2 or 3 years. And then those simple ones are not technically difficult, but they are difficult musically. So you have to kind of know what you're doing and have a you have to be able to govern the instrument somehow. It's interesting, in the end, those simplest ones were the trickiest to do, as it's often the case, as we know, with Mozart and so on. And finally, to cut it short, she convinced me we should at least try. And we tried, and we decided to release it. I'm very happy with it. I mean, I know my limits, but I also know how important this project was for me. And so I'm kind of proud I've done
You
it.
have done it.
Many, many things touch me. I mean, I know what I would like to have ideally better. And you know what, Alexandra, for me, like, the appreciation of what real pianists can do was catapulted by this project. Like, you know, I am so appreciative now to anyone who is a master of this instrument, because I know what it means to get there. So especially for a person like me who has a the musical mind goes ahead, and my fingers don't. They are just not that good as the orchestra players I conduct, you know, and I cannot fire them. I cannot fire my own fingers.
I know about Jerzy Belohlavek, but are there any mentors or teacher who profoundly influenced your approach to music? And are you yourself a mentor to young musicians?
So Jiří was the main figure, not only after I met him, but also before, because I simply saw, even with my youngster's mind, or maybe especially because of it, I saw he was so much standing out amongst conductors I was seeing, conducting, especially the local orchestras in Prague and Brno, later Vienna and so on. I simply thought, this is a person who knows exactly what he was doing. I mean, it's a good, you know, weapon for a teacher to have. You know, there are so many inspiring people, but some of them do it very intuitively, like they don't know what they're doing. They follow some kind of instinct. And he had a good balance between emotion and a brain control and manual technique and diplomacy and efficiency of rehearsal and all of it, which you can learn from. And so I did all my best to become his student, and I managed to from my second year at the academy, and it turned into an amazing friendship until his last day in 2017. We basically were very close friends, and I corresponded with him. He was never mentoring me explicitly. He would have never thought to say, you should do this and you should not do that. But he was always, you know, a good ear, and he listened carefully what I said, and then he suggested his own experience or shared his own experience, and really, as the best friends can do. So he was there for me, and I miss still kind of sharing with him what happens in my life. I have to do it just virtually, you see. But apart from that, I had several stages, I would say. You know, one stage definitely was Bernstein, as for many people, as I was, especially in my adolescence. He was like this figure who can conduct, compose, play the piano, teach, you know, communicate with public, be politically involved, etc. And on top of his wild life, somehow intrigued me into art world. And later I had a stage where I was really fascinated by, you know, Abbado, and then by Kleiber. Then I had 1 or 2 years of Celibidache and so on. But that what I've mentioned only to say some names, it's not decisive. You know, I think I learned very quickly to be inspired by many interesting examples. And today you would be surprised, but maybe sometimes I'm most inspired by unusual types of conductors who do it differently, you know, who do different stuff, who do things which I wouldn't maybe invent myself, much more than, you know, some mainstream figure. Also people who do different repertoire than I do. So yeah, I went through all my admiration to people like Kubelík and Ancel and Neumann and Pešek when it's about the Czech repertoire, or Jílek in Janáček and so on, Mekeras. But it's now I don't need this kind of accompaniment. But if suddenly I am going to discover something less usual from a French repertoire, you know, all of a sudden I happen to be in touch with completely different people, you know, and then suddenly it inspires me in different ways. So it is quite varied. But at the very beginning, I think Bělohlávek in real life, because I really met him and spent a portion of life with him as a teacher and as a friend, and probably Bernstein would have been the biggest model. That's why now the film, the movie about Bernstein is somehow, it's an interesting thing, because I went through this, you know, hype about him as I was a teenager. So for me, it's like very retrospective, and I wouldn't need this kind of an impulse because it's already there.
And are you a mentor to to young musicians?
So, yes, as it's natural, I think it's coming more and more into my consciousness, this responsibility for the next generation. But the main wave, the main focus for me is, if I can be honest, not really teaching of conducting, but working with the orchestra musicians. That's what I feel is more and more on my plate, and I want to do it, like working with youth orchestras, student orchestras, and so on. I think that's probably even more important for me as for now than explicitly teaching young conductors. There are two reasons for it. I really don't say a phrase if I say I don't feel ready yet to teach conducting. I really think it needs even more experience and even more wisdom, to really go for the responsibility, because ultimately I think the teaching process is not just dropping this and that, but if you really teach someone, you should be there for those people as a full human being with full responsibility. I envision, if I am healthy and all right, maybe when my own children, who are now 8 and 11, when they are maybe adults, and then I have this next stage where I can think of the young generation, not just my children, but in general, it will be a little more natural for me. But there's also the other aspect, because I'm highly suspicious about how conducting can be taught. And so far, almost every masterclass of conducting I've seen was disappointing to me. I thought it was always much more about showing off of the experienced maestro than actually really helping the young person. What I do, though, is I tell everyone I'm not teaching. I simply don't teach, and so don't mention me as a mentor, because I don't have also capacity time-wise to do it. But I'm always open to speak to everyone, and I find time, to meet. Of course, my rehearsals are open generally everywhere I go, if the orchestras allow. I'm happy to answer rather more of particular questions, not like what should I do to be a successful conductor? That's too complex and too vague. Unfortunately, most people ask exactly that, and I don't have an answer on it. It's always only frustrating to think, what should I say? I'll be passionate, work hard, meet the right people. It's all cliches, and everyone knows it. And could you tell us how to do it in particular? Like, whom should we contact? No, I cannot. It must be generated by the life itself somehow. But if it's about, psychology of rehearsal and questions about the pieces or aspects of studying the scores, I'm available within my time span, for 20 minutes here, 30 minutes there. But somehow, actually, people who really search for teachers, they really want those figures who take the responsibility and help on a deeper level. And I don't have the capacity to do it for the time being. But I'm working regularly with the Czech Student Philharmonic. That's like a young academy of the Czech Philharmonic Orchestra. I have worked and will work with Mahler Youth Orchestra. I'm in touch with the Royal Academy of Music here in London, and so on. So these things I find very important. I like to influence and share with young musicians in the orchestra. That's, after all, that's the main role of the conductor, I think.
Yeah. You already touched a bit base, but conducting comes with immense responsibility. How do you prepare yourself mentally and emotionally for high pressure performances? I've been admiring you for years now. We've met each other like a couple of, I don't know, maybe sometimes 1 hour before a concert, which for me was extraordinary because I would not do this if I were you. So you must have this capability of focusing right away in that moment in time. How did you prepare over the many years? Do you have a strategy?
It's a relevant question. An honest answer, I never had a real stage fright as a conductor. Never. I had and do have a very strong stage fright as a pianist. So actually, one of the reasons why I cannot actually easily embrace much more of a public piano playing is actually exactly this, because I lack the amount of stage experience of overcoming the stage fright. Now, it's a lot of stuff one has to do if one has this stage fright problem, and I haven't even started dealing with that because I didn't have so many concerts as a pianist. As a child, I was kind of innocent, and once I was really potentially a professional, say, especially my thing would be accompanying much more chamber music playing, not really an orchestra concerti or recital. So I've had one recital of my own, and I remember exactly what it was like. But I was still a teenager, so it was still to some extent an innocent mind and one off. But I didn't ever have a stage fright as a conductor. So it's a disposition. I think I know colleagues who do have stage fright as conductors, and I don't. I'm lucky. I do have not a stage fright, but kind of a responsibility, a field where when I feel the orchestra is under-rehearsed or shaken, or when I kind of I'm aware that conductor relies on the mastery of the players or singers. So in a way, I mean, every conductor finds out sooner or later that unless he or she does something extraordinarily stupid and incompetent, basically conductors' mistakes really don't have such an effect. You know, you can of course, if you beat a different meter where everyone depends on you in a contemporary piece, it can cause a big trouble, but it's somehow always somehow secondary, the effect. You know, it's not really like the way if you touch a completely different chord, or if you get lost in a sonata and you park yourself in a different key than you should, and you know, these kind of things cannot happen to conductor. It's a matter of fact, because the orchestra always will somehow play on. It will not collectively get lost. So, but still, I think the main task is not this. I think the main task is to be fit to inspire on stage. So it's kind of having the right energy for the players and for the public. Because what a conductor cannot do simply is to come, or should not do, is to come and radiate complete, lack of energy, like radiate nothing. Because then it cannot be good in any way. It's better than if the conductor is not there, basically. So I need very simple stuff. I used to be given all kinds of indication by people around myself, teachers, my parents, like, you should focus before the concert. You should, you know, don't distract yourself. You should do this or that. And in fact, I found out that sometimes the best preparation for a concert is the right type of distraction, like a welcome distraction, which usually for me is like meeting lovely people that explains why I did it with you. Or sometimes I read a book, or sometimes lately I write some texts. I quite like you know, writing, when I study something and I write text, or maybe sometimes even copying a text, just occupying my mind mildly so that it cannot wander around and have a worry, you know. And I like a good cup of coffee. And for me, the essential thing is an attempt, at least an attempt, for a sleep before the concert. So I need my 1 hour, ideally 2 hours of complete rest, which I really take very seriously. And I go to my pajamas and I go to bed and I dim the light and I pretend it's a night. And I touch wood. I can sleep in the afternoons before the concerts. Occasionally, I get so deep in my sleep that I don't want to go to the concert. It happens to me sometimes. But actually, the resource of energy coming from deep sleep, even if you feel a little tired on the way to the podium, is priceless. I'm so happy to always have the sleep having happened, because then I have the right energy for the concert and or the opera performance, and also for the activities after, because the conductor is very often part of so much socializing after the concert that one has to find the energy somewhere. Sleeping is great. I recommend sleeping to everyone.
Okay, but how do you manage the expectation of working with world-class orchestras and soloists? There must be some pressure, and you are very young for how much you've already achieved. How do you deal with that?
Well, by not trying to deal with it at all. So I'm trying to be myself. And I always, if you ask me for my frank opinion, I always thought my particularly somehow determined way of working with the orchestra when it comes to things which are important to me, like especially the morals of attitude to playing, if you want some kind of description, if you know what I mean, like the approach, the serious attitude, the thought behind it, the effort to phrase well and to play with homogeneous sound and to be like chamber music. Like, it's all about how the players actually approach the thing, much more than a particular idea. This piece has to sound exactly this way. I'm actually kind of tolerant when I see someone is really strongly bringing a different idea about, say, a phrase. I'm very happy to actually accept it, as long as it's seriously meant and or very deeply felt, And so for me, this is the frame in which I feel a huge responsibility, like for the energy of the execution. But in terms of like a concrete expectation about details, how things inevitably have to be in order for me to be satisfied, I am quite open-minded. And I'm not hiding it. I always say that in interviews, that I think 50% of conductors' work is, of course, the conductor must be highly demanding, but this is what I described. Like, the orchestra must be on the edge of their chairs and go for it. But I mean, the other half of my mind is really curiosity what the orchestra themselves are bringing. So it's like a two-way traffic. And it's also for my soul and for my life, this is a present. It's like meeting collectively a different person. And that person is an expert. That person is an amazing artist. Of course, it's 100 people, but you know what I mean, like in a metaphor. And I'm curious what that artist has to offer. And then I want to bring those inspirations of theirs and mine into harmony and present it with a powerful effect. When I feel the orchestra has no opinion or has a very lukewarm approach, then of course I take it in my charge and I just do 90 or even 100% of my work. But if the orchestra is a very strong-minded and I sense there's a power and beauty of what they're doing, actually I try to take it seriously. And suddenly, after having said that, you realize it's not about like you. It's not, I don't care if someone says, okay, I expected this and got something else. I want it to be very authentically a result of the concrete meeting of concrete people in the concrete hall with the concrete piece and everyone going with absolute intention into it. And I want to navigate the whole so that it makes sense. And I think opera house is even more so. Of course, I mean, again, it depends. You have to have a cast who fit together. It cannot be like every person with completely different voice and opinion. But then you want to acknowledge the personality of every single soloist. And accompanying a soloist, like you, that's even one story higher. Like, how could I interfere into the opinion of the soloist too much. It's impossible to compete with the perfection of preparation of a soloist. So you're there to help. And of course, occasionally it happens that it doesn't suit your vision at all. I mean, but it happened to me like 5 times in my lifetime, you know, that I really disliked the soloist so much that I thought, oh, I want to leave. And then a little conflict is apparent. It has to happen inevitably. But really, how many soloists I met? And if it's 5 people, it's good, isn't it?
That's very graceful, actually. And for soloists to work with the conductor who's open and actually make music the way you just said with the orchestra, that's the dream, actually. But that's not always the case. I think I've met more than five conductors with whom it was not the case.
It is really for me, it's a matter of a respect to the expertise and artistry of other person, you know. So who am I to tell the pianist behind me how that person should play a phrase? Or, well, I am sharing my opinions. I will say, how about this? But then you have cases which are very black and white. If a pianist has two, three, four, five opinions about this and that, and shares those with me, it's all fine, and I can always incorporate it into my doing. What I cope badly with, if it's like a cover, the opinion is cover story for incompetence. Like it happens occasionally that a solo is just rushing because this, I don't know, the scales are not managed very well, but then presents it as an opinion. Yeah, like I know with all my instinct that it's because there's some technical flaw, but then the soloist says, "But I want, you know, this music go enthusiastically forward," and then you have the musicians in front of you, and they find absolute no sense in it, and then you suddenly are responsible for the orchestra. So that is sometimes a problem where you have to talk in private to a soloist and say, "Look, don't rush here because it doesn't make any sense," and that's actually ultimately where the moral profile or like the ethics of the person are coming into play much more than the artistry, because the best the best soloist in the world can accept a constructive criticism or an impulse to change something. But there are people who are extremely sensitive to anything you tell them, you know, like and then of course. But still, you can have a good time and never meet the soloist again. That's always an option for everyone. But as I said, these are exceptions, absolute exceptions, because usually there's so much to admire on every single one who can play on such a level as to play with a symphony orchestra of the category I come to that. It almost never happens.
Jakub, you're a father of two. How do you balance your demanding schedule with family life?
Well, it's in a way a question which has been occupying my mind for a long time. So the relevant answer is I am managing because I have a tremendous wife. Full stop. If I didn't have a tremendous wife, I could do my best and it would not have worked as well and as satisfying. I've had, compared to other parents, kind of usual, if there's any usual in that area of life, but I've had very little time spent like on an everyday basis. My formula was always like when I am at home, even if it's a weekend and not the whole week, and not even every weekend, but every second or third weekend, I tried always not to work at that moment. So be fully present. I mean, it's an ideal world. Sometimes it works better, sometimes not. Your mind and body, in fact, is occupied more or less, depends on the season. Sometimes I'm so tired actually when I come home that I am very happy with my darlings, but I'm barely able to do anything. And then you think, okay, I would now really need much more time with them. But I, you catch me at a very good point somehow, because now with the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden, where I'm starting next season as a music director, it's suddenly for the first time in my life that I can be really with my family at home on a regular basis and work from home. So I'm getting suddenly what is normality for people usually. And we are talking now while I'm in London and getting ready for Yenufa in the Royal Opera House. And I enjoy it so much. Actually, I see that it's one level better to be really able to work on a top, level like I can do, I'm privileged to do, and yet be in one's own bed
Yes.
every night. It's, well, I'm not always, because sometimes I need to move because my place is taken by my daughter. But like just the simple stuff, like conversation at the end of the day, and experiencing things together, and having breakfast together, and accompanying children to school, which is all compatible more or less with your conductor's life if you work in the opera house like that. I really, really welcome this change in my life, and it was time to do it. Because as you know yourself, as children go to this age of, teenage, they need a lot of attention of and
Yeah.
patience and presence, etc. So thanks God I can do it now, but it's been difficult until now. And as said, I mean, I owe tribute to my wife Clara, who just made it possible without complaint and problem.
Have your experiences in parenthood influenced how you approach music or leadership?
Well, so if I should be cheeky myself once, I would say yes, just accompanying my children at their instrument learning, like violin and piano learning, makes every orchestra in the world the easiest group on the planet. Because they just don't speak back. They are not opposed to work. They know how to read music. They know that they have to work for 90 minutes and they don't complain about it. So, in a way, suddenly you have no problem with any orchestra, that's the funny part. The serious part, but a positive part, is also like you realize on your children how important music is, and you also realize how amazingly enriching it is, how great it is for any child to occupy themselves in music. Like for the listener, I should state my children are not pushed to approach a path of, a future professional musician at all. They both play the violin and the piano. They both actually are very talented in that and actually very lazy. And they both complain that they have to do it too much. And we kind of try to, find the right balance between not pushing but persevering, because it's an also interesting thing, like this popular notion that a young person can learn an instrument without any kind of discipline is a nonsense, I think. I think like learning any instrument requires incredible work and discipline, and it's not popular for the children to, to persevere like that. But yet you realize how what a gift it is to be actively musical. So somehow me being parent actually increased the urgent feeling, like it's incredibly important that music education doesn't disappear. It's probably it's actually a very frustrating sphere of feeling, because so many countries actually abandon music education altogether. And just, I don't understand at all, because all kinds of neurological, psychological, pastoral analyses say music is one of the best things a child can be exposed to. And yet, out of actually populistic comfort, people responsible for the curriculum are getting rid of it in so many countries, or got rid of it already. So this mission somehow got very palpable, you know, like, if nothing else, then at least some kind of exposure to music, not complete absence. That's what changed in my life most, because I see the environment of the children.
Yeah. You have been praised for your innovative programming choices. How do you decide on the repertoire you conduct, especially when you're sharing so many different orchestras? How do you decide what suits best for this one, for that one? Have you got a strategy behind, or you go just through an emotional filter?
Yeah, it's a good question, but I have like several drawers, you know, several categories, several shelves. So the most beautiful shelf or category is that I just meet a composer or a piece and I get so passionate about it, then I just do everything possible to, you know, put it everywhere I want. Now it's more and more difficult to actually fulfill that kind of a category, because I have done, at least in the concert repertoire, more or less the whole standard bulk of symphonies. I mean, not definitely not every symphony of every composer, but I, you know, between, at least between Mozart and 21st century, well, I should not exaggerate, between Mozart and 1950s. So say all those important pieces, at least I've either done or studied, you know, and make my mind about. And then occasionally I find something and I just want to go for it. And then I share that with my, usually my constant partners, my Bamberg Symphony Orchestra, Czech Philharmonic, Santa Cecilia in the past, or Philharmonia Orchestra, now, of course, opera in England. And I try to program it. It's often something which is not the mainstream repertoire. And so I actually have to tackle an incredible opposition, because everyone is driven by the commercial problem, you know, like the marketing aches, which says, like, you cannot do this because we cannot sell it.
Yeah.
It's a paradox, because sometimes, as I observe in my career, sometimes it was easier to program unusual pieces as I was yet a little less successful than now, because those orchestras who are not completely on top of the sphere, they somehow are able to program more interesting dramaturgies than, you know, the most exposed ensembles. But I'm trying to continue that. Then, of course, then I have my whole agenda, which is very natural, very authentic, and very welcome of my native background. And we are privileged. I mean, now we Czechs are privileged to have so many incredible composers, and not just incredible, but also successful. At least some five, six composers really belong to the canon. And I find especially fulfilling to find less known pieces of those well-known composers. You know, one example for all is Dvořák, you know, so everyone plays cello concerto and the New World Symphony, but not everyone plays some kind of less known symphonic poem. And then if you combine Dvořák's fame and my reputation, that's a sphere where you tend to succeed to present something of a novelty, you know, a discovery. But the other side of the coin is, like, I tried not to be, you know, part of this scheme, like Czech conductor, that's always Czech music. So I have like certain habit of limiting myself, even if I always actually like doing Czech music, but I don't want to be as the British people say, like pigeonholed in just this box, Czech conductor, Czech music equation. But I still tend to usually try to represent at least the wider region of what I was growing in. So I tend to prefer a little bit more German, Austrian, Hungarian music than, for example, American or French. It's very logical, and I feel very natural about it. And of course, this region is so rich that you could do just that for the rest of your life, and you could still be discovering new things. And then I have a special category which I really like, and that is if someone concrete, a person, a promoter, a presenter, or an agent, or a soloist, or an orchestra manager comes and says, Jakub, could you please consider doing this piece with us? Like, and name something which I would never think about myself. Or not never, but not in a first
instance.
And then you think, wow, and I might not know this piece so well, so I get a score, and I start occupying myself with something I would never initiate myself. And I so much love this, like this external impulse. Again, it's a little different for the soloists and the conductor. Conductors, it's easier to study a score in a way, in terms of variety, you know, than to learn a concerto as a pianist, for example. But it also takes a lot of time, and I love these external impulses. So one extreme example is now, because my mind is now full of Wagner, okay? Because I'm studying The Ring of the Nibelung, which is, you know, I could study till the end of my life. And I will do it in 3 years' time in London as a cycle. And I feel I studied almost every day now, if I can, you know, 1 hour here and there. And it's already a couple of weeks of study, and I'm still at the very beginning. You know, it never, the progress is so slow.
Yeah.
But why I say that, because I would have never had probably a courage in the context of my particular busyness to say, now I will want to study The Ring, because, you know, there's so much other stuff to do. But because the Opera House offered this as an option, like, would you want to do this in 27? Because we will be doing it. And you are a music director, so of course you don't need to, but would you like to? I'm so glad this offer came to my life. And I'm a very good student. I've always been, you know, teacher says you should study that.
You're a professional.
You know, I go. And I feel so rewarded by that. So I'm so happy this impulse came. So that's a special category.
Yeah, but that's also because, you know, you're very open for all these things, and then they come to you and you take the opportunity.
And yes.
That
yes.
means for other people like me, we have some ideas where I feel I can tell this, I can offer this to you, and then you have a look if it's something interesting or not. But with other people, you know, there you feel sometimes a resistance, and then you're kind of keeping it for you because you feel this might disturb. But this
yeah,
is different.
But sometimes, again, to find the right aspect of other people, sometimes people are resistant because they are very responsible, so they don't want to promise something which they then don't want to do. Now, the motivation for not doing something are different. Some people just want to relax and not work too much. Some people just know their limitations. That's to be respected, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it happened to me too that I promised something out of blue because I thought, oh, what a great idea. And then while studying, it happened to me several times heavily with contemporary music. You know, I said, no, I will do this. It sounds great. Sounds interesting. The music of that composer I've heard fascinates me. Let's go for it. And then I'm studying this contemporary score, and I'm looking at every page for 2 hours, and I'm just deciphering, you know, millions of indications instead of, I don't know, having a family life.
Yeah,
And then
yeah.
I think like, oh my God, what did I promise? This is terrible. And but somehow the outcome is always in a way rewarding. It's like so contemporary compositions, it's something like those soloists, as I said. Like I would remember five, six cases in my life where I really regret it. I invested the work, like it was not worth it. But usually it somehow turns into something good. So one has to be clever that I would like to recommend to everyone, like it's a dangerous field, but maybe it's for nerds like me, it's easier. But I would only study when I want to, you know? And I think it's good to kind of do some work every day, but sometimes, you know, the specific form of the work doesn't need to be forced. You know, that's also when I play this one-off piano project. Sometimes I had absolutely no energy after whatever an opera rehearsal or a symphony concert to just to practice Strauss songs. I had no wish to do it at all. But I suddenly thought, well, maybe I could do the way people go for jogging. I should do kind of finger jogging. So I played, you know, Czerny and you know, Clementi, and actually, it doesn't need. I played maybe in a slow tempo, not really with some expectation, but I spend the time with the instrument, and I think it's the same with the scores. Occasionally, it's good to go through the score even without really heavily focusing. And next day, the inspiration comes, and the focus it's there, and you enjoy it. So it's like. It's a little bit, the scores and instruments are a little bit like human beings. You also don't kick them out of the household because you don't have a you're not in a mood to speak to them. One day is better, another day is worse.
With your upcoming role at Covent Garden Royal Opera House and Ballet as a music director, what are your aspirations for this next chapter in your life? Or is there something you dream of conducting or any productions which you have not done and you're a part of the Wagner one which is upcoming? Is there something else?
Oh yeah, there are things, but they are planned or impossible. So, aspiration, I've presented all my aspirations at least for the next 5 years, and many of them have been incorporated because we basically have planning done more or less until 2030. So that's really I know what I will be doing, and it's important because I have to learn it all. It's not it's such an easy business, and. Apart from that, you know, I try not to have a particular concrete expectations and aspirations. You know, I don't want to be like pseudo philosophical, like strangely somehow, you know, cool about stuff. Of course, I have my expectations and responsibilities, but basically, I try to follow the mantra, which is so important to me, like not of not having. Too precise expectations of stuff, not just in art making, but in life in general. If you have a very precise expectation, what you want to achieve, actually, if you think about it deeply, the only thing which can happen is that you will be disappointed. Because actually, it never happens that you get what you expect. Never. So I try to be rather passionate about, you know, planning things which I like. And which are good for the company, I think, and the good balance and so on. And then kind of forget the burden of it, because I think to wake up every morning and think, oh, where I should be in 5 years or something like that, I never learned how to cope with this. I'm much better in just thinking, okay, what shall I do now in the next 5 minutes? And too much planning, I think, is potentially very restrictive. But I fail in some areas. For example, I would so much like speaking so much more languages, and because of the lack of planning and my passion for music and conducting, it's always kind of collapsing because I don't have time for it. One example, you know. So Maybe there's a little component of laziness in it, which I admit. So maybe I'm a little lazy to plan too much. But then, I learned my lesson. I had a stage in my life where I planned everything. Like I had all kinds of lists of priorities and plans, and it all collapsed every single time. So I think it's really good to embrace the present much more than the future. I really believe it.
That's what's beautiful. Jakub, my last question. Oh,
Yes.
now there's a coffee.
Yeah, the wine has been done, and now there's coffee. Yes.
Okay. So my last question, if you weren't a conductor, what alternative career might you have pursued?
I have no idea, I think art would be there. I think language would be there. Maybe theater. I think something between music and written words, not visual arts. That's not my case. No, not my fascination. Interesting because my father is an architect, and actually all members of my family are more direction visual arts driven. Like a child being much better at drawing and painting than singing and playing an instrument. But I'm not sure if I would have found or if I would find a similarly satisfying profession. Like theoretically, I would love, for example, to be a translator in languages, but there's the real life fulfillment cannot be as great as conducting. It just can't. I could be a teacher in a way because I really care about communicating the tradition to the next generation. But I would inevitably be probably frustrated because I would turn to be too strict and conservative, I think. That kind of a sphere. I couldn't be a lawyer. I thought as a child I could be, but I couldn't. I just cannot deal with this kind of mindset at all. I couldn't be a doctor because I'm, first of all, I'm, well, as a surgeon, I couldn't do it because my fingers, similarly to the piano playing, are not
I cannot believe this.
skillful enough. But I don't have the right relationship to the physicality, especially like wounds and blood and so on. But who knows? I think something with the culture, it would have to be something. I could be potentially an agent or a presenter, or I don't know, politician. I couldn't be either because it's too there's too much compromise in it, and populism, which I'm not able to offer. So yes, humanity, something with humanity, a scientist potentially, but I wasn't really as great in maths and physics and chemistry, but it interests me. I am something where I would be exposed to knowledge and learning and studying and improving and communicating it to some kind of a public, whatever it would be, I don't know. But oh yes, I also like all that business of publishing houses. What I could be very good at, because I have real talent in that, is like correct anything in the text. So if I'm presented a A4 paper with a text, I just go in 5 seconds through the page and I discover all mistakes.
I'm sure your kids adored this.
Oh, they hate it. They just hate it. So something like that. Language, music, culture, publishing, translating, research about humanities, scientific work. I'm very, you can see, Alexandra, it's all very impractical, So I wouldn't be a pilot. You bet.
Well, talking about languages, you've learned German.
Yes, German is fine now with me. English, German.
Yeah.
I'm having beautiful but slow progress in Italian from passive to active, because passive knowledge is very good. I can cope with people speaking around me and reading opera scores and so on. I have a good ear for it, I think, but it's just the practice of using it which is behind. French is right after Italian, and that's about my circuit. Of course, all Slavic people have some kind of understanding, basic understanding of other Slavic languages. So Russian is actually fine for me. But again, it's more in a passive way. I don't claim I can use it, but it's something I can cope with, unlike Chinese or Japanese.
Jakub, thank you so much for this wonderful conversation. It has been a privilege and an honor to have you with me.
Thank you so much, and thank you for inspiring this. And I've had a great time with wine and coffee. Thank you.
That brings us to the end of this very special episode of the Piano Fortissimo podcast. I want to take a moment to thank each and every one of you for the incredible support and enthusiasm you've shown since the podcast launched just a few months ago. Your kind messages, thoughtful feedback, and ongoing engagement mean the world to me. As we approach the holiday season, I'd like to wish you all a wonderful Christmas if you celebrate, and a joyful, peaceful new year ahead. May 2025 be filled with health, happiness, and of course, beautiful music. I'm so excited for the conversations and stories I'll share in the coming year, and I look forward to having you join me on this journey. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at either Alexandra Siloccia or the Piano Fortissimo podcast on Instagram for updates, behind-the-scenes content, and much more. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to this podcast on Apple or Spotify so you never miss an episode. Until next time, take care. Thanks for listening. This was Alexandra Siloccia from Piano Fortissimo. Don't forget to subscribe, share with fellow music enthusiasts, follow us on your favorite social media, and most importantly, worry less and let the music flow.